welcome to the 12th episode of the Radix Copycast. I'm Emily King, Radix's Research and Marketing Executive, and today I'm joined by Fiona Campbell-House, Radix's Managing Director and Lead Copywriter.
Hello.
In this episode, we're going to be looking back at 2013 and what the last 12 months meant for B2B technology copywriting, including how marketing automation took centre stage and why video content doesn't appear to have taken off quite as expected. Plus, we'll look at new trends we see coming up in 2014. Now, I think one of the things we've noticed this year here at Radix is an increase in clients using marketing automation, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely something that we've noticed this year, partly because I think we've had more clients this year than previously. So I think we're working with something like 10 B2B marketing agencies now and 6 or 7 direct clients. So we've got exposure to more basically marketing campaigns operating in the B2B technology sector. And there were certainly clients using marketing automation software like Eloqua, like Marketo in 2012. But what we've seen this year is those campaigns, I think, getting a lot more sophisticated. So people seem to be learning a lot more about how to use the technology to best effect, how to segment campaigns, how to sort of orchestrate longer campaign periods so that you can nurture clients through a longer buying cycle.
I mean, we've done several content audits for clients this year as well, which I suppose has seen them put out a lot of their existing content in these kind of automated cycles, but then does this mean that if they've gone through their entire back catalogue this year, that really they're going to have to do something about fresh content for next year?
Yeah, I think this might be an issue that people run into that perhaps they haven't kind of thought about yet. We've definitely seen clients doing content audits, so they're looking through all of the content they've got already and then turning that into these kind of month-long campaigns so they can send out a new white paper or a new video every week to customers to keep them interested, to keep them thinking about the brand. But we have seen quite a few clients who have used up everything now, and I think they're going to have to start thinking about, you know, we need to create quite a lot of new content to keep this going. So I think that there may be a frenzy of content creation next year, but, you know, it remains to be seen.
I think another trend we've noticed this year, and I've just recently blogged about this, more on an annoyance issue than anything else, but everything became a story this year, it seems. Everything can be a story.
Yes, I think that there's been quite a liberal interpretation of what story actually means when it's come to marketing this year. So traditionally, a story, well, it has a beginning, a middle and end, but it has more than that. It has a kind of central character and it has some form of conflict or obstacles that the character must overcome. It has something that they're generally in pursuit of that they want to achieve. Maybe at the end they achieve that or they find that that wasn't the thing that they were after in the first place and they need something different. So that, I mean, if you look at kind of classic guides to what is story, what is storytelling, that's what they would tell you a story is. But yeah, so I think that a lot of people have expanded the interpretation of story this year to cover almost anything. I mean, we've seen infographics being talked about as stories when really they're just sort of making one point. Or we've seen maybe just illustrations or anecdotes being talked about as stories when, you know, they don't really go anywhere. They're just a kind of illustration of the point that the person is making. So, yeah, everything became a story. And I think maybe the term itself is kind of losing its effectiveness because if everything's a story, then...
Well, what's left to not be a story? I mean, well, it's also the framing of it. If you frame something as a story, I mean, while people might potentially find it interesting, if it's meant to be a serious piece of content, are people going to take kindly to it if it's kind of pushed towards them as, oh, you need to check out this story?
Yeah, and also I think, you know, if people are being told, oh, this is a great story, they're expecting it to be a story. You know, they're expecting it to be engaging, they're expecting to be entertained, to be sort of carried along and to identify with a character and maybe recognise themselves in being told to them. And, you know, if they're then presented with an infographic, they probably feel a bit cheated because, you know, that's not really a story at all.
I think one of the worst examples that we've seen, it wasn't in B2B, but Waitrose have a lot to answer for this year.
Waitrose's story campaign, as it is, quite hilarious. So I think the ones that we've seen are the ones they've got Heston Blumenthal in. Mm. And I think we put this on our blog the other day, that there's an advert, a Waitrose advert, for the story of Heston's ice cream. And literally the story is Heston likes going to the cinema, so he made some ice cream that's got popcorn in it.
So that's great.
And it's available at Waitrose. So technically you've got a beginning, a middle and an end there, but you know, whether it's a story that makes you feel warm and fuzzy and engaged, not sure.
I still don't think anything's topped GE's Datalandia campaign.
Yeah, you like that one. Do you want
I love that one.
Talk a bit about why you like that one.
Basically, General Electric, they did this, worked with an agency to make this campaign of videos looking at applications for big data in everyday life. And you'd think that would be really complicated to put across. Unless, of course, you happen to have come across the world's largest miniature railway in Germany. And you've decided to make use of this ginormous miniature railway to represent people's communities and just how events can be affected by big data and how data can be affected by events. And they just told a whole series of actual stories. Like, there was a whole thing about vampires taking over the town and just, like, how data was used to help everyone and how everyone responded to it. But there was you had sort of, like, the world was set up. There was an inciting incident. People reacted to this incident and, you know, changes happened and, you know, some kind of equilibrium was reached by the end, some kind of conclusion. It's not something I felt you got at all from any of the Heston stuff that's come out this year.
So that's more kind of classic storytelling and somebody at GE or at their agencies have thought really in detail about this and sort of lovingly crafted this campaign, really thought about how it would affect and draw in the audience, which is what we'd kind of expect people to be doing when they're talking about storytelling. But that actually brings us on to the next point we were going to talk about, which was we didn't see nearly as much video in B2B marketing this year as we thought we were going to.
No.
Or at least we certainly weren't as involved in as many videos as we thought we were going to be. And I think we thought that video was going to be used much more as a storytelling medium in marketing. You know, there's a lot of statistics that show that video engages people more closely, that they form more of an emotional involvement if they're watching video rather than reading text. But for some reason, for us, it just didn't seem to take off in 2013, or at least we didn't get asked to write lots of beautiful video scripts as we hope we might be asked to. And I think that there's a few things behind that. So I think B2B companies are doing video, but they're doing things like videoing seminars or videoing like how-to demonstrations with their engineers that doesn't really require any kind of copywriting or script writing. Or they're going out to events and doing vox pops with people at the events and editing those into, you know, quite nice, compelling videos full of nice sound bites. But again, there's no real kind of script writing or copywriting element needed there. And I think possibly that the types of videos that we hope we might be working on, which are the more kind of lavish fictional productions, are really just seen as too expensive, because you do need to put a lot of time and budget into making something that really works when you want to put nice production values on it. And it also means learning a lot of skills that I think a lot of marketers don't actually have, kind of, you know, really in-depth kind of video production and direction skills. That is something that people are still learning, I think, in our industry.
Mind you, I think because we saw the one internal project for a client come to fruition this year, and that was an internal video, and that had a lot of reasonable production values in that. So maybe there's some people are experimenting it with their internal content to encourage their staff before thinking maybe we could bring something like this outside.
Yeah, that might be the case. And it's not that nobody's doing video. It's just that I don't think as many people are using video as a marketing medium as we would have expected to see this year. Maybe it will take off next year. So what we did see, I think, something that definitely for me came out as a trend this year in content marketing is much more use of expert pieces. So this is when, instead of writing a thought leadership piece that kind of expresses what your company thinks on a particular topic, you go out to the market and find five or six influencers or experts around that topic, interview them and get their views, and then put this together, maybe as a video or maybe as a white paper or maybe on a website, on a microsite. But it's definitely just harnessing the fact that there are influencers out there who are of interest to your target audience, and basically showing what you want to talk about in a much more independent light. So instead of it's just you, the brand, talking about this, it's showing that there is interest out there and that a lot of people are thinking about this topic, and just sort of being helpful to your customer base by showing you what a lot of different people think about this topic rather than just what you think about it.
Is there a chance that some of the content with using influencers, as it were, or experts, that they might just share it among themselves. Like, they end up with just kind of these circles where they're just kind of sharing it among themselves, and it doesn't somehow break out to the wider intended audience.
I think there's a danger that it might go that way. So, I mean, obviously, one of the main reasons for doing this kind of exercise in the first place is that those influencers then tweet or share this piece of content with their audience. So you get, you know, in theory, a much wider reach for it than if you were just using it yourself. But I think there is a risk, and possibly you do see some sort of, you know, cliques forming, and maybe sort of some sort of echo chambers forming, where, as you say, people just kind of share it around the same people. It doesn't really break out of that echo chamber. And there's also the risk that if you keep going back to the same people, then it's not going to look as independent and as unbiased as it could do, because it becomes clear that this is your circle of friends rather than, you know, these are the top influencers in the industry.
I think one thing that I've definitely noticed, mind you, that might be because I've been drawing a bunch of them, is that comics and comic style illustration have kind of begun to work their way into people's content arsenals. And when I mean, obviously comics, I mean, you know, a couple of panels next to each other telling a little story or something. But the comic style illustration is stuff that we've seen at like events, you know, where somebody's maybe been given a whiteboard and they've just started doing these kind of doodles to help summarise everything that's gone on. But I've noticed that MailChimp have now got a regular comic.
Yes.
Which is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
Well, MailChimp's comic is quite weird. It reminds me a bit of Adventure Time, if anybody's seen Adventure Time. It's quite surreal. So I think you have to be in on the joke or in on that kind of comic illustration and art and approach to kind of really appreciate what MailChimp are doing there. So I think it's for a niche audience rather than a wide audience. Yeah, I think you're right. We have seen kind of comics and cartoon strips take off a lot more this year. And I think it plays into the fact that this whole thing about how B2B marketing used to be quite serious and people shied away from being frivolous because there were very serious buying decisions involved. And now people are, you know, coming to realise that people buy from people, and you can have empathy and you can have kind of emotional involvement, and that's quite nice, rather than the buying decision being a purely rational decision. So I think some of these more what you might think of frivolous but aren't really frivolous when you come down and look at it, visual styles are coming to the fore, and comics and cartoon strips are definitely one of those.
We're hoping to have an ebook out next year about how you might be able to use comics.
We are, yeah, we're looking forward to that. Yeah, so we're working on that at the moment, an ebook about how you could use comics in B2B marketing. I think the challenge we've got there is that we've decided to do the whole thing as a comic, which means lots of drawing for you.
Yep, it's fine.
I think one of the more enduring trends, I guess, of the year, because this was a hot trend in 2012 and in 2011, was ebooks. So we continued to produce a lot of ebooks in 2013. But I think the perception of how they can be used in marketing is changing, which certainly is for me, having worked on a lot of them, because it seems to be that the ebook format, which is your landscape format, it's very visual, it's got lots of kind of graphics in it and lots of pull quotes, and it's quite snappy and punchy. This was kind of posited as, this is going to replace the traditional white paper, and we're not going to do white papers anymore because they're boring, they're dry, they're academic, they're dusty. We're all going to move to these really funky ebook formats. But what seems to me to be happening is that the ebooks seem to be being used more as a top of the funnel piece of content. Mm-hmm. So they seem to be more used to kind of attract people in and do a bit of education around an issue and show how it affects people. Whereas white papers are still with us, and white papers seem to still be being used, but a bit further down the funnel. So they're being used to help customers to create an internal business case for what's probably quite a big investment in a piece of technology. And so your powers that be probably want to see that whoever's requesting this piece of technology is taking it seriously, and there's been this kind of serious work done on how it's going to benefit the business. So I think that white papers still have a role to play there in being quite solid and robust pieces of content to back up an internal business case for an investment.
So as we've previously discussed in earlier episodes this year, you do not necessarily need to fill it from head to heels with jargon and sort of closed language.
No, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of them are, but you don't have to write these things in jargon. But at the same time, it doesn't have to be written in kind of really kind of matey, chummy way. A lot of ebooks I see are. I mean, you can write about serious stuff in an engaging way without using jargon. I mean, if you just look at any article in The Economist or in the Financial Times or any kind of business publication like that, it's really interesting to read. It's not full of jargon, but it's not written in this kind of sort of bouncy way that a lot of ebooks are. So I think I definitely think there's a kind of market for both types of content.
So that's 2013, but what do you think is going to be happening in 2014?
Yeah, so, well, in content marketing specifically, which is where we do a lot of our work, there is a, by now, extremely famous slideshare done by Velocity Partners called CRAP, the Content Marketing Deluge, which I think is around about a year old now, but it kind of predicts the fact that now everybody's on the content marketing bandwagon. There's just going to be this huge ocean of content out there. And so the challenge for marketers is going to be, how do you still get noticed and how can you kind of cut through all of that noise? So I think what we're going to see in 2014 is content becoming a lot more specific. I think even though it's quite difficult to pronounce, I think hyperspecificity is going to be my buzzword in 2014. So that's specific to the individual customer. And there's a lot being talked about personalization of content. But I think where I see this differing is that content personalization tends to be automated. So it's like, you know, you insert somebody's name, but you also kind of dynamically insert a piece of content when you know what they're interested in. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about writing and researching and producing content that is targeted at a particular organisation or a particular individual even. I mean, we've been involved in some quite interesting account-based marketing campaigns this year, where we have literally produced individual pieces of content and quite big individual pieces of content for particular organisations. And we're now even down to the level of looking at the individual people this content is going to and kind of understanding what they're about and looking at their LinkedIn profiles and what have you, what they're interested in, and tailoring the content to them. So I think that's one way that content's going to become more specific next year. And another way, I think, is focusing in on really specific problems that people have. So in recent years, a lot of technology marketing was very kind of generic and vague, and you know, there was a lot of emails saying, you know, improve your business efficiency with product X, or you know, optimize your supply chain, click here for the white paper. You know, these problems are they're too generic now, and what you need to be doing is focusing a lot more on actual kind of nitty-gritty day-to-day problems that people have and helping them to overcome them. So I think it's something I've seen Slideshare do quite well recently with an email campaign offering a white paper or some tips on how to start a presentation. So it's not like, you know, how to give better presentations, click here. It's literally how to start a presentation. It's a really specific problem or issue that people have, and they're talking to that. And that's the kind of thing that I think next year people are going to be using to kind of cut through and get recognition, just sort of get people's attention because you're focusing on a really specific thing that they find really annoying.
Well, that's all we've got time for this episode of the Radix Copycast. You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly e-newsletter for latest copywriting tips and insights.